Good afternoon. Senate Judiciary Committee meeting is called to order. Today is Friday, lucky Friday the 13th, 2022. The time is 1:35 in the afternoon. We're meeting in State Capitol Room number 205. Senators in attendance are full house today. Senator Keel, Senator Schauer, Senator Hughes, Senator Myers, and myself as Chair, Senator Holland. And we do have a quorum to conduct business. If you have your cell phones on you, please join me in turning the volume down. Thank you to Nancy, our recording secretary for today, and Talia, our moderator. At this point, we're going to bring House Bill 62 before the committee. This is the second hearing on HB 62 in Senate Judiciary. It's relating to marriage witness, solemnization, and consent. And I neglected to hold public testimony on Wednesday. We're going to open it up for public testimony today. HB 62 is open for public testimony. Does anyone in the room care to offer public testimony on HB 62? Seeing none. You want to confirm that for me, Representative Klayman? No one in the room wants to. Always ready. And at this point, we do have a few people online. And so I'm going to start at the top of the list and work my way down. First up is going to be Louis Tozzi. And next after that, just so y'all get an idea what the order is going to be Aaliyah Abbas. But first up is Louis Tozzi. And Louis Tozzi, if you'd introduce yourself and announce any affiliation, your location, and begin your about 3 minutes of public testimony.
Okay, thank you, Senator Holland, and to the committee. Thank you for hearing this bill. My name is Louis Tozzi. I'm testifying on behalf of myself, and I live in Anchorage. I'm speaking in favor of the passage of HB 62, but with an amendment. Back in April, I was in Juneau with a friend of mine, Don Tyree, who I expect will testify after me. And at that time, we had an opportunity to speak with most of the members of this committee and also the members of the Senate Health and Social Services Committee. And Don, my friend Don Tyree, offered testimony before HSS committee. And after her testimony and the testimony of quite a few other people, Senator Costello had an amendment drafted to the CS that you're currently considering, but unfortunately it was not offered in that committee and it was passed to this committee. I'm a little bit concerned, actually quite a bit concerned, with the current version of the bill as it relates to the age of marriage consent. When we were meeting with various senators on these committees, we did hear a number of issues. For example, Senator Hughes asked if there was a way to remove bad actors, and Senator Begich was concerned that some of the things that were being proposed would affect the ability of emancipated minors to marry. My issue is that with the way the current CS is structured, somebody who was 16 or 17 could petition the court and ask to have a marriage license issued. The standard that's set up in this statute is quite a bit different than the standard that's set up for an emancipated minor. And because of that, there's considerable opportunity for abuse of the statute. My suggestion to this committee would be to offer and adopt Senator Costello's amendment that was drafted for the Senate HSS committee. At the time that the CS was issued, there was a memo issued by legal services regarding the ability for emancipated minors to marry based on the new CS. And to paraphrase, it basically says, except where the statute says specifically an emancipated minor has all of the rights of an adult. And those specific prohibitions would be to vote or to consume alcoholic beverages. And so adopting Senator Costello's amendment would not affect the ability of an emancipated minor to marry. The emancipation statute is quite rigorous, and its intent is to determine whether or not a minor is capable to make adult decisions. Marriage is certainly an adult decision and has tremendous ramifications in the lives of those who are participating. And quite frequently, the young women, the underage women, are coerced into getting married for any of a number of circumstances. By adopting Senator Costello's amendment, we would have a single standard allowing somebody to receive a marriage license, and would be quite a bit more rigorous than what the current bill is offering. I think it's very important that anyone entering into marriage be as fit to make that decision as possible. The current statute allows is much more lenient.
Mr. Tosi, you're at 4 minutes now. If you could wrap it up, please.
Okay, I'll just say that I encourage the committee to look at and adopt Senator Costello's amendment, which would still preserve the right of emancipated minors to marry, but otherwise make the standard 18 years of age. And that's all I have.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Tozer. What I'll do is I'll have my staff, I'm going to have other staff reach out to Senator Costello's office, ask her to provide a copy of that that proposed amendment if they have it available. All right. Thank you, Mr. Tozer. And next up is Aaliyah Abbas, and after that would be Brooke Ivy. So, Aaliyah, if you would please state your name, any affiliation, your location, and begin about your 3 minutes of public testimony.
Yes, sure. Hi, my name is Aaliyah Abbas, and I am a child marriage survivor. I'm testifying on behalf of myself. I am from Maryland, and I wholeheartedly support this bill with the amendment to raise marriage age to 18, no exceptions. Children belong in schools. They belong in safe spaces. They do not belong in a stranger's bedroom. This child marriage hits home. It's extremely personal. I'm a product of child marriage, and who better than to know a child bride the reality of this injustice of a lifetime. At 17 years old, I was taken out of school and was forcefully married off to a complete stranger without my consent. That one instance changed my life forever. I was raped and became a teenage mother. I was raped three times and over again, but I have two children, both without my husband, but I love my children. They are my world, but like nobody, no child should ever have to endure the unpleasurable load of this abuse, which I and so many other child marriage survivors endure mentally, emotionally, and physically. You know, I was beaten, bullied. I would like to stop here and just say that I've never defined myself as a victim, even though I have been brutally victimized. I am a survivor who has the courage to finally stand up for myself, and most importantly, for the sake of my children at any cost, when even that cost looked like death, where my uncle had, you know, threatened me that I would be killed if I took any steps to get myself out of the situation, but I still did it. I am the exception. I do not want anybody to endure what I have endured and what countless of other child brides have to go through. Not everybody is as lucky. Please, I urge you guys to amend this bill to 18, no exceptions. That is important to do. It harms no one. It costs nothing to end this human rights abuse. And thank you guys so much for your time.
All right, Aaliyah Abbas, thank you for offering your public testimony. Next up will be Brooke Ivy, and after that will be Sarah Tasneem. But first up is Brooke Ivy. If you'd please state your name, any affiliation, your location, and begin your about 3 minutes of public testimony.
Good afternoon, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. For the record, my name is Brooke Ivey, Vice President of Policy and Advocacy for the Alaska Children's Trust, or ACT. I am calling in from Anchorage today. As a leading statewide organization focused on the prevention of child abuse and neglect, we are in support of House Bill 62. While we believe this legislation could go even further, as you've heard from other testifiers, and would support banning the age of marriage up to age 18, House Bill 62 does take an important step towards ending the practice of child marriage in Alaska. We thank Representative Rasmussen for raising this issue on the House floor and Representative Kleeman for championing this effort through the process. All children deserve to be safe and healthy, a value I know we all share. Sadly, Alaska has struggled with some of the highest rates of child abuse in the nation for decades. In particular, we know child marriage is frequently used to hide child sexual abuse. Despite the U.S. State Department's announcement of child marriage in other countries, Alaska's antiquated statutes do not reflect this value. Instead, Alaska's current marriage laws create the very real opportunity for vulnerable children to be coerced into marrying an abuser. All too often, child sexual abusers in the United States utilize authorized loopholes, such as being able to marry a 14-year-old, to legalize their abuse. There is no single solution to the complex issue of child abuse and child sexual abuse, but to effectively turn the tide on this epidemic, multiple strategies must be deployed. While ACT firmly supports an even stronger stance against child marriage in this bill, raising the state's minimum age of consent from 14 to 16 is one clear step towards further protecting Alaska's most important resource, our children. We urge the committee to support House Bill 62 and ensure it makes it across the finish line this year. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
All right. Thank you, Brooke Ivey. Next up is Sarah Tasneem, and after that would be Casey Swegman. So, Sarah Tasneem, if you'd state your name, any affiliation, your location, and begin about your 3 minutes of public testimony.
Okay. Can everybody hear me okay?
Just fine.
Okay, my name is Sarah Tasneem, and I am here on behalf of myself and any other forced marriage survivors that can't be here to speak. My name is Sarah Tasneem, and again, I'm a survivor of forced child marriage, and I just wanted to thank the Senate Judiciary Committee for hearing our testimony today. I'm providing testimony to support Senator Costello's amendment to House Bill 62 to raise the minimum age of marriage to 18, no exceptions, due to the serious harm that underage marriage poses to minors. I hope that my testimony will help this committee understand some of the harms that minors can face when forced into a child marriage. Under the law in Alaska, minors aged 16 and 17 can marry, which puts them at serious risk of harm and abuse. Verifiers must be 18 years or older, and it would really make sense for parties entering the marriage to also be 18. My hope is that this committee will act to protect minors. My father and legal guardian was the one who forced me to marry at the age of 15. During a summer visit, I was visiting from Colorado to see my dad in California. I was forced into a marriage I did not want. I met my ex-abuser one morning, and I was forced to marry him that same night. My mother, who lived in Colorado, did not know that was taking place. My perpetrator had full control over my life, and he was able to leave the country with me. I was taken out of school when all I had dreamed about was going to the Air Force and then to law school. Instead, I found myself in a country isolated from everyone I have ever known. I was raped daily and impregnated almost immediately. 6 months after our spiritual ceremony, we came back to the Bay Area, where I was legally married at 16 and pregnant. My pregnant belly should have alerted authorities to a rape instead of rubber stamping a marriage certificate. I wasn't advised of my rights or even asked if I wanted the marriage. My marriage was a prison. It took me 7 years to escape from and then 3 years to get a divorce. Marriage before the age of 18 makes children more likely to be pulled out of school than their adult counterparts and three times more likely to suffer abuse in their marriages, all of which was true for me. It has taken me years to recognize the severe negative impacts that child marriage has had on me and my children, and the long-term effects include PTSD, anxiety, poverty, and it has been an endless road of recovering from financial, sexual, and emotional abuse. There are so many reasons why child marriage is harmful, and I cannot think of one good reason why Alaska would want to continue to expose minors to these harms. I urge your committee to please listen to all of the survivors on this call and amend the law, and please do not allow marriage under the age of 18. Thank you so much for your time.
All right, Sarah Chazanin, thank you for our brief at ease. Senator Judiciary is back on the record. Sarah, are you still listening in?
I'm still here, yes.
And just for documentation purposes, could you give us your location?
Sure. I'm in California.
Nancy, do we need anything more? City. Can you tell us what city in California?
Yeah, I'm in El Sobrante, California.
All right. Thank you, Sarah. Thank you so much for sharing your story with us. And at this time, we're going to move on to Casey Swagman, and after that will be Dawn Tyree. But Casey Swagman, if you would please state your name, any affiliation, and your location, and offer about 3 minutes of public testimony.
Absolutely. Thank you. My name is Casey Swagman. I'm with the Tahoe Justice Center, and I am based in Washington, D.C. And I thank you, Chair Holland and Vice Chair Shower. I am the Director of Public Policy at the Tahoe Justice Center, but I wasn't always in this position. I spent the majority of the last 9 years directly serving survivors of forced and child marriage. We are a national legal and social services organization that works with survivors of gender-based violence, including forced and child marriage, and I speak today in support of HB 62 and the amendment that would raise the age to 18. Since 2011, Tahoe's Forced Marriage Initiative has served hundreds of individuals facing forced marriages across the country, given the unique nature of the services that we provide. This includes minors, and it includes individuals from Alaska. In our experience as service providers, children under the age of 18 are especially vulnerable to forced marriage, and they have limited options to escape a violent home or to protect themselves because they lack the legal rights of an adult. Forced marriages in particular can involve very insidious forms of coercion that you've heard from Aliyah and Sarah, and you'll hear from Dawn. Not only physical violence, but also extreme psychological abuse and threats. When that coercion comes from a parent, as it often does, marriage can truly feel like the only option for a teen girl who is scared and still very dependent on her family. We appreciate the amendment that would raise Alaska's minimum age from 14 to 16, but we would ask that this committee do more to protect Alaska's children and end child marriage by setting the age at 18. The majority of children who marry are 16 and 17 already, but unfortunately, those few years don't make a big difference in their legal or practical rights. The state still considers them a child. This makes it far more difficult and dangerous for them to resist an unwanted marriage or to leave an abusive spouse. And based on our casework and research, I want to flag just a couple of the reasons that Alaska's current law poses such serious child protection concerns. The parental consent exception can really conceal what we know to be parental coercion, and that combined with the state's spousal defense to statutory rape currently roadmaps the workaround for predators. Right now in Alaska, it's far too easy for a whole host of horrors to lurk behind the marriage of a minor. And we know that even when it is not forced, child marriage sets minors up for detrimental outcomes on almost every measure, whether it be mental, physical health, education, economic, you name it. So I thank this committee for its careful consideration of amending this bill further to raise the age to 18 without exceptions, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
All right, Casey Swagman. Thank you for your public testimony. Are there any questions for the committee? Seeing none. Thanks again, Casey Swagman. Next up is Dawn Tyree. After Dawn Tyree will be Elizabeth Sitton. So Dawn Tyree, if you'd state your name, any affiliation, your location, and begin about 3 minutes of public testimony.
Thank you. Can you hear me okay?
Just fine.
I am in Oregon, in Washington County. And while I live here now, Kodiak, Alaska became our refuge and hiding spot when I escaped my child marriage. My name is Dawn Tyree, and I'm a survivor advocate of child marriage. Even though my marriage took place when I was only 13 years old, I feel it is important to underline the hardships we endured after I escaped the marriage. I was married at 13 and expecting my second child at 14, escaped at 16. My family had disowned me for leaving the marriage. This is not uncommon practice and leaves child brides floundering and hopeless. I was not prepared for life as an adult before the forced marriage, let alone after. I was an emancipated minor, yet women's shelters turned us away, and the Department of Family Services closed the door on us, telling me to go back to my parents who were responsible for me. Emancipation is a false safeguard for the consciousness of the court. Children are not treated differently because they are emancipated. It is an extremely difficult legal process to navigate, and many child marriage survivors do not have the wherewithal to navigate it. My husband continually reported me as a runaway, and when law enforcement caught up to me, I was threatened to be returned to my rapist. I was left with no choice but to separate my family unit to survive while seeking out a stable environment. It was devastating for us. After I found a shared housing arrangement, within weeks, I lied to my new roommates and told them that I suddenly had to take in my two children. We were evicted. This lifestyle went on for years. We lived without essentials such as toilet paper and shampoo, and often without electricity. At 17 years old, I still needed my husband's signature to enroll myself in school. The pain and isolation from the community were brutal, and it's as though I was blamed for being a child bride, things that were totally out of my control. We were looked down on and ostracized. The court system didn't know what to do with us, and my divorce was not finalized until after my 18th birthday. I was awarded physical custody, but never awarded any kind of support, and this is not unheard of. It happens today. We're punished for things that were out of our control. In my 5 years of lobbying and testifying, I have never once heard a testimony of a survivor advocating for the right to marry under 18 years old. I praise the Alaska legislator for raising the age from 14 to 16 to marry, but it's not enough to protect children from forced and coerced marriage. I urge you to change the language to 18, no exception. Thank you so much for your consideration.
All right, Dawn Tyree, thank you so much for sharing your story with us. Next up is Elizabeth Sitton, and after that would be Sasha Taylor. But Elizabeth Sitton, if you'd care to state your name, any affiliation, your location, and begin about 3 minutes of public testimony.
Thank you. My name is Elizabeth Sitton. I am calling from Los Angeles, California, and I'm just representing myself as a survivor of child marriage. I'm calling in to support HB 62 with the amendment at 218, no exceptions. And I was 2 months shy of my 17th birthday when I was forced to marry a 28-year-old man that I barely knew. I wouldn't have contested it or spoken to social services because of my fear of my family and the importance of honoring their wishes. My marriage was not because of a pregnancy, by the way. I was still a virgin, and I was married off within 2 weeks of my mother and stepfather's decision to force me to marry. My biological father was not notified of my impending marriage, as he has no legal rights to me or my brother, and there were no resources, no shelters, or legal rights for me as a child to get away from them and avoid the marriage. It's also important to realize that my marriage created a haven for his statutory rape. I had real hardships because of the trauma of my experience. I had very little education as I was pulled out of school in eighth grade. And after my marriage, I was taken out of the country to Australia. My passport was taken from me, effectively human trafficking, as I was isolated and had nowhere to escape to. Supporting oneself and getting one's education is very difficult for those of us married at such a young age. It wasn't until I was 24 that I was able to resume my education, as I had to be incredibly focused on making ends meet, so I couldn't go to school. And at 55 years old now, I still have nightmares about this experience and have had years of therapy and mental health issues that are a direct result of the trauma of my child marriage. So as you can see, there were repercussions that have permanently affected my life. And I would ask you to please pass HB 62 to raise the age of marriage to 18 years old, no exceptions. And this would have allowed me to leave my home before they were able to force me to marry, just before my 17th birthday. Doing so is going to change the lives of so many girls in Alaska, and I just thank you for letting me testify.
All right. Elizabeth Sitton, thank you for providing your testimony. And last up will be Sasha Taylor. Sasha Taylor, if you would please state your name, any affiliation, your location, and begin about 3 minutes of public testimony.
My name is Sasha Taylor. I am in the Washington, D.C. area, and I am testifying for myself.
All right. We can hear you loud and clear. If you'd please continue.
I appreciate the change to raise the marriage age in Alaska, but I am requesting for an amendment to raise the age to 18, no exceptions. My name is Sasha K. Taylor. I'm a forced child marriage survivor. In the fall of 1991, I began my sophomore year in high school. I was told to go to my grandmother's home for dinner, and when I arrived, I discovered that I was to be engaged to a man 7 years older than me, whom I had never met or spoken to before. I was surrounded by family members, forced into submission, and engaged that night. I was then legally married to him in an Arizona courthouse because the legal marriage age in Arizona at the time was 15 with parent permission. Now it's 16 with parent permission in Arizona, the same age that Alaska is aiming for right now. And I would like the committee to understand that no child is able to speak when they are surrounded by family, pressured or abused into submission, unable to speak because nobody ever asks them what they really want, unable to speak because they have not discovered the power of their own voice, unable to speak because nobody is there to speak on their interests or for their best behalf or there to advocate for them, unable to speak because nobody ever questions the process because, quote, it's the law in that state, end quote, and the local government employees are just simply checking boxes and doing their jobs as they're supposed to do, and unable to speak because they don't have the privilege of choice because the parents are the one making the decisions for them. I was that child, and I was unable to speak, and I remained silent that day. The two things that almost every victim, survivor of a forced marriage have in common are abuse and socioeconomic background. These archaic laws repeat these toxic cycles, and they set generations back many years without education or careers, especially girls, because they're the ones who are being forced into these situations. For me, it took me over 10 years to complete my college degree. I have no relationship or any friendship with anyone that I went to high school with, and I did not experience high school like a kid should. I never had any high school crushes. I never went on a date in college. And I never had experiences like the young adults around me should. I mean, that they deserve to have. My childhood was taken away from me. And even conversations with individuals around me are difficult to have. And I was groomed to go in a back room to make out with someone I was not attracted to be a daughter in line, to think of the kids that I was supposed to have and stay home and be a wife. And then after I did have my forced marriage, I was not allowed to leave the house. And to be honest, I still cannot believe I'm writing and I wrote a victim impact statement, and now we're still having this conversation about laws that should not even exist. And I'm asking you to please avoid the exploitation of minors and to avoid repeating these cycles of abuse. These are archaic laws. And as a first world country, we need to do better to protect these minors. Thank you for giving me the time. And again, I appreciate the change to raise the marriage age in Alaska, but I am pleased requesting for an amendment to raise the age to 18, no exceptions. Thank you for your time.
All right, Sasha Taylor, thank you for sharing your story with us. That is the end of public testimony attendees online. And there's no one else in the room wishing to offer public testimony. At this time, we're going to close public testimony on House Bill 62. Public testimony is now closed. Senator Hughes.
Yes, I just like to take a moment to make a comment, Mr. Chair, if I would, because I heard some of the same testifiers in a prior committee. And for public that might be listening, is very horrible what happened to these victims. But in each case, there seems to be a theme running through of where the family was condoning it. And I hear what they are saying, but I want to, the public be aware that we've got several safeguards. First of all, it limits the person can only be by 3 years older than the person if they're 16 or 17. That's one safeguard. The other safeguard is that not only if the parents give this consent, it still has to be approved by a judge, and the judge would have a chance to hear them. My understanding is the judges will meet, and I stand to be corrected, but my understanding is they can meet with a minor in a room without the parents present, so the minor can be very forthright. So there are some safeguards, and as much as some of the victims want to blame the law, and that is very natural, and I understand it might protect in some cases, because these families were arranging and condoning, even if they were in a state where they couldn't be married, I am sorry, but in some of these cases, the family may have still have had allowed that young girl to be with the older person, whether or not they could legally be married. So to me, the problem really stems from family situations, and I think we put in the safeguards with the judge, and that the person could, it's more Romeo Juliet kind of thing that we have here, where, you know, a 17-year-old is in love with a 19-year-old or a 20-year-old, and they still have to go before the judge. So I just want to clarify, it's not quite what was described in the testimony. We've got something that is better than what we heard. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. Senator Schauer?
That's fine. I'll go. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I hear what Senator Hughes is saying, and I think most of us are not often swayed too much by public testimony because our minds are sometimes made up on a bill and what we're seeing. But I will tell you, this is something we spoke about 2 days ago after the committee meeting. We discussed age and where this sat because it's one of the concerns we had and talked through it even with the bill sponsor. And listening to the testimony, I got to tell you, Mr. Chairman, having already thought that this was probably too low and that there are a host of issues, and even what we saw in the military, we discussed that and other things with somebody that's young. I am under no illusions that a young 16-year-old girl, even if, you know, you would go to the judge, if you have been threatened by your family and somebody and you know what stands outside that door when you go back to it, depending on the judge and if they even do decide to make those questions, that person is going to be scared to death because they're only going to see the judge for a little while. Then they're going back to those people. And I am, under no illusions that a 16-year-old will not be scared to death into silence and answer the questions the way she's been told to answer those questions. This is a problem for me, Mr. Chairman. I mean, I'm listening to the testimony. It only kind of starts to move me in the direction of this is not good enough. And so I want to mention that. I know there's some safeguards, but I also know how people work in psychology, and I don't know that we have enough here to take care of girls listening to these stories. I just want that on the record as well. This is I'm looking at the amendment we have here. Thank you.
Senator Keel?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had not heard these testimonies before, so I just want to thank all five of these survivors who testified for sharing these frankly brutal stories. We've had some conversations, and I also grapple with this bill. It is a material improvement from what we have in Alaska law today. There is one thing I think that differs, unless I'm misreading it, from what Senator Hughes said. I believe that because the bill doesn't change 05171A, a 16 or 17-year-old with parental consent does not have to go in front of the judge. I think we only change B. And unless is there a repealer, Senator? Senator Myers is correcting me. There's a repealer. Senator Hughes was correct. I'm really glad to hear that. There is one other, I think, protection that Senator Hughes did not mention, and it is the case in some of the other states that were mentioned and not in others, but under Alaska law, when someone 16 or 17 years old is married, they legally become an adult, and they have access to divorce without anybody else's say-so. That helps some. Like Senator Schauer, I struggle with this a little bit, but that is one thing I think we need to include in our conversations, is that understanding under Alaska law. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Keel. So what I'll state is we did have the previous amendment submitted by that was considered before. It is a 3.5-page amendment. I will caution the committee. We'll probably have a quick discussion after we address the three amendments that we have before us right now. My concern is to let the perfect become the enemy of the good. And we all agree that we have an improvement before us, and to consider a 3.5-page amendment and change this bill significantly, where I think it would probably put it at risk in a conference committee, just with the timeline that we're talking about. We're looking at a possible concurrence. We're looking at a possible conference. We don't know when this session is exactly going to end and how much longer we may have to work on these items. But at this point, if there's no other... Senator Hughes.
I tend to agree with you, Mr. Chair, and I just want to get a couple other things on the record. I do think this is something that perhaps could be vetted by the next legislature, and because my concern are the parents. What on earth are these parents doing? There should be something where that young person can come back and bring something, and the parents be penalized in some strong way. This is unacceptable that parents are allowing this. I also want to say I have a good friend that was married at 17. She's been married over 35 years happily to the same fellow with children. My mother-in-law was married at 16. I know, I believe on the House floor, Representative Delana Johnson testified that her mother was married at 16 for, I believe, almost 50 years until her husband passed away. And I will say, at age 16, 17, I kid you not, I was as mature as I was at age 26, 27. So there is a range, and I think it's really, really unfortunate. The testimony we heard, and I think that we could possibly develop more precautions, but I do agree with you, Mr. Chair, this is a pretty big policy call to be making on the fly. But at some point, I would like to see something where we go after the parents, because the theme in the testimony was, you know, that this law somehow would fix this. But again, I really think the problem is with the parents, and whether or not these victims would have technically gone in before a justice and been married or not, I think they still would have been subject to the abuse the parents would have allowed them with these people, whether or not they were legally married. And so that really is the problem. So I agree with you, Mr. Chair. It's too much to take on right now, but I wanted to get that extra on the record.
All right. Thank you, Senator Hughes. And with that, we do have amendments to consider. And everyone should have a copy. Let me find mine of the amendments. And what I will do at this time is I will move amendment number one.
I'll object, Mr. Chair, for purpose of discussion.
Thank you, Senator Schauer. Amendment number one addresses the and compensation is not the proper word, but actually covering travel and hospitality on in the bill. And it just inserts where it says, let's see, page 2, line 1. Let me grab that. Yeah, I just want to make sure I got the right bill in front of me. Page 2, line 1. So the entire text is a legislator or legislative employee may not. This paragraph may not be construed to prohibit a legislator from accepting travel and hospitality primarily for the purpose of solemnizing a marriage. And just behind the word accepting, it just inserts four words, reasonable, ordinary, and customary, just kind of put some guardrails on what a legislator is allowed to accept and to prevent it from being some exorbitant travel or exorbitant method of hospitality. With that, is there any further discussion? Senator Schauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to put on the record as intent, at least for myself, I had informed you I was going to put an amendment to strike this. Because quite frankly, I said I do believe that, you know, far be it from a legislator or elected official to ever do anything unethical.
To strike this, you mean strike the text in the bill, from the not bill. My amendment.
That is correct.
Okay.
Thank you. Sorry. Good catch. And I just would like it, again, put out on the record that you and I discussed it, that I'm okay with this, and plus putting on the record the intent of is to have a legislator that doesn't go on the gold-plated, you know, $5,000 cruise in the Inside Passage paid for, or, you know, gets the ticket and the, you know, like you said, the big lodge hunting thing, you know, out in the, you know, worth $10,000 package while they're doing a marriage with their buddy, wink, wink. We know this stuff happens, and I think that we have to be cautious of that. And so this will help, and I think this is a record that the, you know, a judge could always look at if there was ever a case, or the Ethics Committee could look at if this happened, and I just want that noted. Because that does make me a little nervous, and I think it does open up some room for legislators to take advantage of it. And I just think that's something we have to be cautious of. But with that being said, I won't oppose the amendment. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Schauer. Is there any other discussion on it? Representative Klayman, are you interested in coming up to the presenter's table and offering any feedback on the is your bill?
As to amendment number one, I have no problems with amendment number one.
You ever put yourself on the record?
Oh, absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Matt Klayman, House District 21, and I think the amendment is consistent with the intent that came from the House. I have no problems with the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Klayman. If you want to just remain there. At this time, Senator Schauer, do you maintain your objection?
I remove my objection, Mr. Chair.
All right. With no further objection, amendment number one is adopted. Up next will be amendment number two. By Representative Correction, Amendment Number Two, by Senator Myers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll go ahead and move Amendment Two.
I'll object for discussion.
All right. So Amendment Two, to some extent it contradicts the part of the point of the bill. What Amendment Number Two would do is push us back to one witness rather than two witnesses as in current law, but it doesn't go as far as the current bill. Putting us to effectively no witnesses. Mr. Chair, reason I brought the amendment forward is, in my mind, marriage is still it's not simply a contract like buying a house. Marriage is it's still a communal thing, a public thing, and having a witness helps to affirm that. And then at the same time, some of the testimony that we heard today regarding child marriage, forced marriage, of course, I think we should probably recognize that forced marriage or marriage that somebody gets duped into doesn't just stop at 18. I think it was about 10 years ago or so, we started hearing of the ISIS brides. Somebody, you know, is going to go get married to some fighter off in the Middle East, or, you know, and that's just one example. And so having a witness, in my mind, is one potential check against that. And I understand that the stories that we heard at the last committee meeting about people grabbing strangers off the street and things like that. I was remembering a story I was reading about one former Alaska leader who eloped with her husband, and they ran across the street to grab a couple of witnesses from the senior center to sign their marriage license. And I recognize that there's things that people do to try to get around that, but in my mind, still having a witness of some kind is still recognizing what marriage is, and tries to provide some of that check of somebody going, you sure you want to be doing this?
All right. Thank you, Senator Myers. Is there any further discussion? Senator Keel, I see you have a quizzical look on your face. Or at least on your eyes.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate, I share Senator Meyer's view of the institution of matrimony, But also, I think I know that story. So I'm trying to figure out how Amendment 2 actually helps.
Senator Myers, you have any feedback?
Through the chair, Senator Keel. So I suppose what I'm getting at with the amendment is that it's one more check, hopefully one more check on somebody saying, are you sure that this is what you want to be doing? You know, we've got the provision in here that has been added with the bill that I like, that we are going to confirm with each party that they intend to marry the other party. And that's, I think that's something better than in current law, that you're making the witness go up to somebody and say, hey, you know, prior to the ceremony happening, hey, are you sure what you're wanting to do? Do you know what you're doing here? And I understand that people are going to, you know, try to get around it with some of the stuff that we talked about today. Be, you know, if it's family pressuring you, it'd be, you know, there'd be a possibility of it be your family signing the witnesses. And if that's something that we wanted to mess with later on, you know, that may be something for us to think about if we're going to address forced marriage. It's a little bit more expansive than what I want to deal with right now. But if we go down the road of no witnesses, then we've closed off that door as a possibility. So I still prefer keeping at least one witness as a check.
Senator Hughes.
And I will say, too, when this was initially proposed by the sponsor of the bill, we heard a discussion about how popular Alaska has become as far as a destination for weddings. And we have tourists, non-residents come up to get married, and often they're getting on a small plane or helicopter to get married out on a glacier. And this would allow still those four-seaters would still allow the officiant, the pilot, and the couple, and the pilot could then be the witness. And in those kind of cases too, which based on some of the testimony, they're being taken off by, you know, in going somewhere, this witness might not be a family member, and by the strength and language in the bill and then a coming amendment, I think it might actually be helpful in that way. Because they would be able to observe the couple and maybe pick up on body language and things like that. And if it's just someone afterwards, when you come down off the glacier and you stop at a gas station and grab a couple people, they're not going to be able to pick up on that kind of interaction. So I actually think it's a safeguard based on the testimony that we heard today.
All right. Thank you, Senator Hughes. Representative Klayman, do you have any input on Amendment Number 2? And just a quick confirmation, Senator Myers, this is, I have labeled I.8. Is that the correct version?
That's correct.
Yes. Amendment Number 2 labeled I.8.
To the chair and members of the committee, Representative Matt Klayman, obviously I kind of came up with the idea of a verifier, so it, as a some level I would prefer the verifier as the answer, but I will certainly respect the will of the committee. The one thing I would actually note that I think is important that the amendment does not affect, if you look at page 5 of the bill, section 5, that requires the person solemnizing the marriage, and if this amendment passes, also the witness, they have to have, their statute now requires their printed names, mailing and electronic mail addresses, and telephone numbers on the form. That's new law. I think that's a really good thing to the extent we're actually trying to find the people. This amendment doesn't change that part of the bill, and so I just want to note that one of the things that's positive about the amendment is it doesn't take that portion of the bill out. It just essentially changes a verifier back to one witness. But I'll totally follow the will of the committee on this question.
Thank you, Representative Klayman.
Mr. Chair, I'll just echo what Representative Klayman said. I think that the Section 5 of the bill that is being added into law is a benefit that we're collecting some contact information for verifier or witness or whatever it ends up being, that whoever's signing that we can go back and find this person and say, you know, if there is potentially a prosecution for a forced marriage or something along these lines at some date in the future, that we can find this person and say, what did you see? What was happening here?
All right. Thank you, Senator Myers. With no further discussion, I will withdraw my objection. Is there any further objection? With no further objection, amendment number 2, labeled I.8, is adopted. And just also bookkeeping, the first amendment we approved was amendment number 1, labeled I.2. Right. Up next is a conceptual amendment that we have the luxury of actually having it in writing. So I see a conceptual amendment from Senator Hughes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move conceptual amendment number 1.
I will object for discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this actually is part of it because I heard the testimony you heard today earlier in a prior committee, and also because as the sponsor of the bill was presenting his bill and going over what it did, it basically said the person at that time who was a verifier rather than a witness was basically verifying that the each party intends to marry the other party. And I thought, wow, I'm up on a mountain and I'm signing this. By the law, I'm supposed to confirm that each party intends to marry, but unless I've read the statute, I wouldn't know that I'm supposed to do that. I might just think, oh, okay, I saw the two stand up there. You know, they said something, they got married, and that's what I'm signing. But actually, our law is now wanting that person signing to confirm the intention. And this, again, is a level of protection for any coerced or forced marriage. So simply what would be required is a marriage certificate, whether it's one from the Bureau or a church or a congregation. It basically, and it could be very small print at the bottom, would basically require the certificate would have to state that the witness has confirmed with each party that the parties are ending the marriage intentionally and in the exercise of each party's own free will. So it basically makes sure that the person signing knows what the law is. Otherwise, they're signing something with and could actually be violating the law. And so I just think it's important. And then, you know, there was a comment. A lot of people like to frame their marriage certificates, and you know, churches can do fancy ones with gold embossed edges. And now we're going to have name and addresses, which is a little bit of clutter, but I'm sure that can still be done neatly and still look nice. And actually having that, you know, if I look back at my marriage certificate and I see in that small print, wow, yeah, I did intend to marry that person, because on some days we scratch our heads and wonder, you know, whoo. But I think it's actually a nice reminder, and I would not see it as clutter on the certificate, but something that really confirms, yes, you know, I wanted to marry this person and it was very intentional. So I believe if we're expecting the people to sign to be confirming something, they need to know that, and we can't expect that they're going to go look up the statute, and that is why I'm offering the amendment.
Senator Schauer.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just one comment. This is a better step. It's moving in the right direction. I will still contend, though, and I won't oppose it for that reason, but I still contend that, and I know somebody, family member, that has gone through this and the abuse, and that person lived every day in fear for their life under the age of 18, 16, 17. So once again, I will say that while this is better and this than nothing, you still have somebody that, and we heard all of the descriptions of, you know, they just grab people off the street and say, yeah, ask this question, you're good to go. That young girl at 16 or 17 that is living in fear for her life is not about to say anything that's going to counter this. And so I just want to make, again, that on the record that some of the things we're doing are certainly a safeguard, but I still don't think they solve the problem. Thank you.
Can we take an at ease, please?
Brief at ease. All right, thank you. Senate Judiciary is back in the record. And, you know, I tell you, people say, why do they go off record to have this? There's a free flow of conversation. It actually slows the process down where, you know, we recognize everybody. And there's a benefit of having a free flow of ideas. We're going to have to try to have some of those ideas that we just presented back on the record right now. Senator Hughes?
Yes, and so we were looking at a section of the bill just regarding some penalties, and I think it's probably the area where at some point we need to address this as far as adults that are coercing us, in this case, if this passes a 16 or 17-year-old, or even for that matter, I don't know, when it gets considered, even we're hearing testimony of 19-year-olds and 21-year-olds where they feel like they're being coerced. But my question, just back, because a lot of the testimony we heard is from other states, and just wondering how it works in our state, because the section that requires there to be a hearing before a judge, the judge has to base their decision on the best interest of the minor. And because the sponsor happens to be an attorney, I just was wondering if he was familiar how that might work.
Yeah. And Representative Clayman. Through the chair, Representative Hughes, Representative Matt Clayman. The courts are very accustomed in cases involving minors to making decisions in the best interest of the minor. I actually think this is one of the examples of the value of an independent judiciary, that we have judges that are selected through a process that makes them very unlikely to be kind of subject to some of the political influence you see in other states. And what I have seen consistently. And I've never appeared in a case with a minor trying to get married under 18. I have no experience with that. But I've been in countless cases involving minors, and I've never seen a judge who did not take that obligation to find that it's in the best interest of the minor very seriously. And I've certainly seen instances in which the judge will send, in cases I've been involved with, and I've heard about it, about cases involving child marriage, where the judge sends the parents out of the room and others so the judge can really talk one-on-one with the minor, and I think part of what that is, they'll do things like, because they've heard testimony about, okay, here's the big judge in the big black robe on top of the big dais, and the judges in these one-on-one conversations, they'll take the robe off and they'll go sit down on the same level with the minor and talk with them one-on-one, because they recognize that they have a certain power relationship. And I think and you all, I think, have heard from Ms. Mead, the general counsel for the courts. I think they take their work very seriously. And so I think we can have a lot of confidence that those decisions made by the judges in Alaska are going to be taken with great care and consideration of everything involved. That doesn't completely eliminate the concerns that Senator Schauer has raised, and I think there's some truth to that. Somebody recognizes they have to hold themselves together for the next hour. And they know if they don't hold themselves together that they'll be kind of held to pay when they get out. But I do think that may be as good as we can do. And I think it's a significant step.
All right. So just to remind the committee, we're still under discussion for under objection to conceptual amendment number one. And is there any further discussion? Seeing no. Representative Clayman.
I would just draw the committee's attention, Representative Matt Clayman, Mr. Chair. In the packet, we provided the latest version of the Certificate of Marriage, which actually, during the course of this bill, was revised by the department, I think in part because of some phone calls my office had with the department. You can see it's the 2021 version of May 2021, so they only revised this a year ago. But they actually have some language about what's being certified. And so this would modify the language that would need to go on the form. But the only thing I would suggest, if it's the will of this committee to add this language, I would suggest you consider a conceptual amendment to the amendment to add not only the witness, but that the officiant, the solemnizer of the marriage, because under the way the amendment is drafted, only the witness is supposed to ask this. And I recognize that if you're performing the ceremony, you ask these questions, you intend to take this person as your lawful wedded husband, lawful wedded wife. And you go through that as an oral matter, but if it's the committee's belief that this language should be in statute, I would suggest the committee consider an amendment to the amendment that adds the person solemnizing the marriage and the witness certify that. It may be they can do it with only one piece of language on the form, but I I think the committee may want to consider.
Thank you, Representative Clayman. Senator Hughes.
Yeah, and I would entertain that friendly amendment. So I would like to move conceptual amendment number one to a conceptual amendment number one to insert on line two.
A brief at ease. Senate Judiciary is back in the record. Sorry to interrupt you. Senator Hughes, please proceed with conceptual amendment number one to conceptual amendment number one.
Okay, I will restate it. I move conceptual amendment one to conceptual amendment one to insert on line two after the word that the person solemnizing the marriage and also on line two to change the word has to have.
Just jot some notes down. Change has to have. All right. Thank you, Senator Hughes. I will object. We've got the conceptual amendment to the conceptual amendment. I'm objecting for discussion. Is there any further discussion on that? Seeing none, I'll withdraw my objection. With no further objection, the conceptual amendment number one to conceptual amendment number one, which will insert after the word the,
that.
A correction, after the word that on line two, it will insert the following words, the person solemnizing the marriage and then it will also change the word has to have on the same line. So that conceptual amendment number one to conceptual amendment number one has been adopted. Now we have conceptual amendment number one as amended before us. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, I will withdraw my objection to conceptual amendment number one. Is there any further objection? Seeing none, conceptual amendment number one, as amended, is adopted. All right. We have exhausted our prepared amendments. And I will just, at this point, I'm going to apologize to everyone who had such touching and traumatizing stories today, but I will come back to I am concerned about the letting the perfect become the enemy of the good, and I think we have a good product before us. And I will not offer any further amendments. I will go to the committee and see if the committee is interested in offering any further amendments. Senator Hughes,
I'm not interested in offering any more amendments, but I maybe should get on the record. Or maybe you as a chair that we authorize legislative legal drafters, since that was a conceptual, to make any conforming changes that are necessary to incorporate that language.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. Yes, legislative, please understand that we authorize them to perform technical and conforming language to follow the intent of the committee. And I actually thought you were going to state something along the lines of, which is what I will state. I will pursue the next fix to maybe addressing the age of consent in Alaska to get married. If this bill were to become law, Alaska would no longer be one of two states in the nation that allow 14-year-olds to get married, and we would become one of 21 states in the nation that allow 16-year-olds to be married. There's 10 states that allow 17-year-olds. Four states put it at 18 years old. And so, as I stated, I do believe this is a market improvement over the current situation. Is there any further discussion? Senator Schauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, like I said, I'm not going to object because it is moving in the right direction, but I just want to note it, as you said, for the young lady, I think most of them are women now, that have gone through this, that this is certainly a step in the right direction, but you can tell there's so many issues with this, so that's not far enough. But with that being said, it's clear that I know how this body works, that if we were to make these changes and look at the amendment that was brought in late, it is likely to kill it in the other body, and there's no time left to fix it at this point. And rather than stay at 14, 16 is better than that for now. So while it's not enough, and I would like to see more change, and like you, Mr. Chairman, I will plan on working on this. This needs to be fixed, as it's kind of clicked in my brain now. I will not oppose it, because we need to be taking steps in the right direction. Thank you for letting me put that on record.
Any further comment? Representative Clayman, do you have any closing comments? Just
briefly, Mr. Chair, again, Representative Matt Clayman. I largely agree with both, Mr. Chair, your comments about don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good, and the comments of Senator Hughes. I think on a very personal level, in an ideal world, I'm very much a supporter of 18, no exception, but I think where we can make improvements, we shouldn't, again, let the perfect be the enemy of the good. In terms of Senator Schauer, people, if this gets through the rest of the process, this is the second bill I've passed in my career involving the marriage process, and I welcome somebody else taking up the lead in the future.
All right, thank you, Representative Clayman, for your comments. At this point, with no further discussion, no further amendments, I will look to Senator Schauer for the will of the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that the Senate committee substitute for CSHB 62 Work Order 32-LS0272/India, as amended, be reported from the committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Thank you, Senator Schauer. With no objection, House Bill 62, as amended, has been reported from Senate Judiciary with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. And at this time, I'm going to recess this committee. I don't know if I've discussed it with everyone, but we're going to recess the committee at this point, because we are anticipating possible legislation coming over from the House that we may want to address before the next official meeting on Monday at 1:30. So at this point, we're just going to recess the committee to the call of the chair. Any further comments? We are recessed to the call of the chair at 2:44 p.m.